ordinance for you, you jackwagon!
Coming to you live from his padded cell high atop Bethel Church, the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
And here we are coming to you live from our top secret broadcasting bunker here at Area 52. This is Pastor Mike. And this is the talk show that hell hates. And the more you listen, the more you know why. A couple of articles I want to run. I'm missing a piece of paper here somewhere. I'll have to try to reprint that. Uno momentito, por favor. For those of you who are following the election, the continuous election of the President of the United States, something happened day before yesterday that has the deep state and the liberal crowd, not only in this country, but everywhere, including China, about ready to fill their britches up. Because they are running nervous over this one. Trump's lawyer team, even though they have a slam dunk case against Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin for cheating on the election, they have the evidence, they have the proof, they have videotape. If you've seen the videotape of the in Georgia, they shut down the whole polling place and said, "Ah, we're going home. Everybody go home. Republicans go home. Press go home. We're all going home. We're going to go sleep. Come back tomorrow. We'll resume counting." So they run everybody out of the building. And immediately, and they caught them on CCTV cameras. They pulled these ballots out of a big box underneath, hiding underneath the table. All day long they had been there. They showed them putting the ballots, the secret ballots, the hidden ballots, the fake ballots, under a table first thing that morning. Then they sent everybody out, and as soon as everybody leaves, they pull these ballots out and they start counting them. And these are all Biden ballots. They have them, they caught them red-handed. But the deep state, the Democrats, didn't seem to be worried all that much about these lawsuits. However, Texas is going to attempt to save the republic, even though Texas considers itself its own republic. At what time they were, the Republic of Texas. Texas filed a lawsuit with the Supreme Court against Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, the four contested swing states. And under the Constitution, states have rights. Individual states have rights. Missouri can sue another state if another state causes damage to the state of Missouri. And we're talking about the people. So the people of the state of Texas overwhelmingly voted and supported President Trump in the election. So the state of Texas files a lawsuit against the four swing states saying that there is substantial proof that cheating on a massive scale took place in those four states, which essentially disenfranchised the people of the state of Texas, basically saying your vote doesn't count because we cheated. Not only did these four states violate their the United States Constitution in the way they held their election, they violated their own state's constitution. Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, they voted, get this now, back in October of 2019, way before we ever heard of COVID-19, the state of Pennsylvania voted, the legislature voted to approve mail-in ballots. People, this was set up long before the COVID virus ever came around. But it violated, that particular piece of legislation violated their own state's constitution. And of course, the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania is left-leaning. So when a Trump team lawsuit attempted to correct that situation, the Supreme Court threw it out with prejudice, meaning we've made a decision that there is no merit to this case. And that's bogus. It clearly violates the state's constitution. So Texas has initiated a lawsuit, and that doesn't go up the different courts, you know, first a local courtroom, then an appellate court, and so on. It goes immediately to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court put it on the docket. In other words, we're going to hear the case. So there's an article out today, a summary of the Texas election lawsuit. Texas claims that the presidential elections, as held and as directed by government officials outside the legislature in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, are flagrantly violated their own election laws by materially weakening or doing away with security measures. Further, according to the U.S. Constitution, the legislature, representing the citizens of each state, has absolute authority and responsibility for how presidential electors are chosen and the will of legislature being expressed through state law. Texas claims that the violations of election law in these states created an environment where ballot fraud was enabled and likely to occur, and did occur. There's no doubt that it took place. Zero doubt. The lawsuit lists the violations of law in each of the defendant states and provides evidence of fraud, the number of ballots handled unconstitutionally in each of the states is sufficient to change the outcome of the ballot counts. Pennsylvania, facts. Vote tally, 3,445,000 for Biden, 3,363,000 for Trump, a margin of 81,000 votes. Requests for mail-in ballots, 70% Democrats, 25% Republicans. Mail-in ballots increased from 266,000 in 2016 to over 3 million in 2020. And in Pennsylvania, here's the law that those mail-in ballots violated. The Secretary of State unilaterally abrogated signature verification requirements for mail-in ballots. In other words, their own constitution says that a mail-in ballot must be signed. But the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania allowed ballots in that were not signed, did not require them to be signed. Which means that an entity somewhere in the state of Pennsylvania can put in thousands and thousands and thousands of ballots mailed in that are not from any one person in particular. Each ballot must represent the vote of one person. But because you don't require a signature, this was all set up. It's all set up before the election. They had planned this out. Remember when Trump tweeted that China now had the means of producing fake ballots? They had the recipe to make the ink and the paper. They had everything they needed. And of course, the mainstream media, oh, Trump and his crazy conspiracy theories. Well, is it crazy now? No. Pennsylvania Supreme Court changed existing deadline for receiving mail-in ballots from 8 p.m. on the day of election to 3 days after the election. In other words, let's find out how many votes we need. Then we'll provide that number of votes. And that's what they did. Election officials in Philadelphia and Allegheny counties did not follow state law permitting poll watchers to be present for the opening, counting, and recording of mail-in ballots. The Secretary of State directed election officials to remove ballots before 7 a.m. on the day of election in order to cure defective mail-in ballots. This was done only in Democrat-majority counties. Election officials did not segregate ballots received after 8 p.m. on the election day, breaking the promise made to the U.S. Supreme Court, thus making it impossible to identify or remove those ballots. Let's see here. The Secretary of State also allowed absentee ballots to be requested online without signature verification. Local election officials in Wayne County, containing 322,000 more ballots for Biden than for Trump, opened and processed mail-in ballots without poll watchers present. Local election officials in Wayne County also ignored the strict election law requirements of placing a written stamp or a written statement or stamp on each ballot envelope indicating that the voter signature was in fact checked and verified with the signature on file with the state. And the article goes on and on and on and on. But the bottom line is Missouri and about 16 other states, along with Texas, joined in on that lawsuit. Said, we're behind you 100%. So what will happen is that if the Supreme Court rules that there was significant cheating done in that election in those four states, then it will put the Electoral College count in the hands of the state legislature. And here's what's interesting. You have all of these, like in Georgia and other states, the voters came out in huge numbers, high turnout election. These voters elected almost without fail a majority conservative Republican for whatever seat was open. State Senate, State House of Representatives, governors, you name it. They voted in Republicans. But they want us to think they elected a Democrat president. Never happened. Never happened. Now, Sidney Powell has come out with another bombshell saying, now that we have these Dominion voting machines in our possession and we're examining them, we're saying that numerous elections in the past using the Dominion voting machines were fraudulent elections because the Dominion voting machine system, the counting system or whatever, is designed to switch votes. Now think about it. A political party with a certain political philosophy, knowing that they can never get elected simply on the basis of their ideology, choosing rather to cheat and steal the election to gain power. Are they doing it for their love of country? No. There's another force at play, and it's called, according to the Bible, the love of money. Greed and covetousness is why your liberal Democrat seeks the power that they want. They want to turn America into a socialist state, which is, in essence, will give the politicians all of the power and all of the money and all of the control. And they will use the media. They've already done it. They will use social media. They've already done it. Google, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all in the hands of liberals in this country that are stifling free speech. things that you cannot say, or they'll deplatform you. Now, I do feel bad for, there's several YouTube channels that I listened to sort of gauge what was going on. And all their videos were monetized, and I feel bad for these people because they got kicked off. There's a lawsuit in California. 20 of these YouTube channels that got kicked off and demonetized, they're suing YouTube for breaking its own contract with these creators, these show creators. However, that's the thing. When you monetize a video, which is one of the reasons why I don't, when you monetize a video on YouTube, that kicks in extra rules and regulations that YouTube has control of. And if they don't like what you say, they can demonetize your videos or just remove you completely. I've had complaints against my channel, and they were bogus complaints. I'd show up one day, and all of a sudden, my channel would be gone. Well, there's a guy that hates us, and he does this every now and then, and it works. But it hasn't happened in a while. And so I'd write to YouTube and say, "What's up? Where's my channel? What happened to all my videos?" And the email I get was that there was it was reported to them that I was making racial slurs and racial comments and things like that, which I never do. But that's how somebody tried to get me in trouble with YouTube. And as soon as I wrote back to them and said, show me what video I said, they put me back on. So I do not monetize my videos, which allows me to be able to do more and say more than some others who monetize their videos. And again, I'm you know, some of these guys I like. They put out some good information. But that's the problem. When you try to make money off of that and you're using somebody else's playground like YouTube, there's a price to pay, usually. All right. There was an article that came out yesterday, I believe, and got my attention. Former Israeli space security chief says aliens exist. Humanity is not ready. And this is from the Jerusalem Post. Let's see here. Has the state of Israel, here's the article, has the state of Israel made contact with aliens? According to retired Israeli officer and current professor Haim Eshed, the answer is yes, but this has been kept a secret because humanity isn't ready. Speaking in an interview to Yediot Ahronot, Eshed, who served as the head of Israel's space program for nearly 30 years and is a three-time recipient of the Israel Security Award, explained that Israel and the United States have been dealing with aliens for years. And this by no means refers to immigrants, with Eshed clarifying the existence of, quote, a galactic federation. I'm not reading from the National Enquirer. This is an article from the Jerusalem Post. Now, as with all things, is it possible? Is it biblically possible? Let's keep reading. The 87-year-old former head of the Defense Ministry Space Division gave further descriptions about exactly what sort of agreements have been made between the aliens and the United States, which ostensibly have been made because they wish to research and understand the fabric of the universe. This cooperation includes a secret underground base on Mars where there are American and alien representatives. If true, this would coincide with U.S. President Donald Trump's creation of the Space Force as the fifth branch of the U.S. Armed Forces, though it is unclear how long this sort of relationship, if any, has been going on between the U.S. and its reported extraterrestrial allies. Now, let me Well, I'll keep reading, and then I'll give you my comments here. Let's see here. But Eshed says that Trump is aware of them, the aliens, and that he was, quote, on the verge, unquote, of disclosing their existence. However, the Galactic Federation reportedly stopped him from doing so, saying they wished to prevent mass hysteria since they felt humanity needed to, quote, evolve and reach a stage where we will understand what space and spaceships are. Says Yediot Aharonot. As for why he's chosen to reveal this information now, Eshed explained that the timing was simply due to how much the academic landscape has changed and how respected he is in academia. If I had come up with what I'm saying today 5 years ago, I would have been hospitalized, he said. He explained. He added that, to quote, today, they're already talking differently. I have nothing to lose. I've received my degrees and awards. I'm respected in universities abroad, where the trend is also changing. Eshed provided more information in his newest book, The Universe Beyond the Horizon, Conversations with Professor Chaim Eshed. I think in Hebrew it would be Chaim Eshed. Along with other details such as how aliens have prevented nuclear apocalypses and, quote, when we can jump in and visit the men in black. The book is available now. While it is unclear if any evidence exists that could support Eshed's claims, they did come just ahead of a recent announcement by Space Something, the group behind Israel's failed attempt to land a spacecraft on the moon in 2019. Uploaded to social media with the text, "Ready to get excited again," the announcement contained a 15-second video of the moon with text saying, "Back to the moon," followed by the date of December 9th, 2020. It is likely that this is a follow-up to the Bereshit spacecraft. The phrase Bereshit, I know that phrase. It's the opening line of Genesis 1:1 in the Hebrew Bible. Bereshit, in the beginning. So they named a spacecraft after the first three words in the book of Genesis, which crashed after engineers lost contact with it just minutes before it was due to land. So, you have another government official coming out and saying, yes, we have an agreement with civilizations who are not of planet Earth. Now, I know it sounds science fiction. I know it sounds like it's a made-up story. And we have to ask the question, can this be true? Is it possible that a people, a nation, lives beyond our planet Earth? And I would say, according to the Bible, yes, there is evidence in the scriptures of just such a nation or a group of nations. Deuteronomy 28, God promised to Israel that if they broke his covenant, didn't keep his laws and his statutes and his judgments, that he would send a nation to them. Let me pull the verse up. He would send a nation to them from afar, from the ends of the earth. Let's see here. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Let me go ahead and put this on the screen as I'm going to do a little slide presentation here too. We're going to talk about aliens, giants, and the fourth kingdom. God said, verse 49 of Deuteronomy 28, "The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand." It can't be the Russians. Can't be the Chinese. those tongues we can understand. Not that I understand them, but people understand them. Then he said, a nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of thy what? Cattle. Think of all the cattle mutilations that go on. It still go on, by the way. And the fruit of thy land until thou be destroyed, which also shall not leave thee either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of thy kine, or the flocks of thy sheep until he have destroyed thee. Let me take you to the prophet Joel. Let's look at what Joel said. Joel said in Joel chapter 1, tell your children of it, you tell your children of it, and let your children tell their children and their children another generation. Four generations. What does the number four represent? The spiritual realm. Fourth dimension. That which the palmer worm hath left, hath the locust eaten. Are there locusts in the book of Revelation? Revelation chapter 9. Talked about it Tuesday. And that which the locust hath left, hath the cankerworm eaten. That which the cankerworm hath left, hath the caterpillar eaten. Four groups. And I'll tell you, I watched a documentary about a guy the other day. He claims he's an artist in New York, and he's painted paintings of the events that have happened to him that he says has happened to him in his life. He claims that when he was a boy growing up in the Deep South, that he lost his virginity to a female alien entity. And that throughout his life, he has been producing children through this female alien that he called Crescent, like the crescent moon. The question to ask is any of this possible? And I believe the answer is yes. I believe that fourth kingdom from Daniel chapter 2, and we'll get into those notes in a little bit, but I believe that fourth kingdom is a kingdom that is not of this world. Now, are they Marvin the Martian types? Are they Chewbaccas, Wookiees? What are they? Well, we would call them, from the Bible, we would call them evil angels, devils, gods, unclean spirits, familiar spirits. We would use all of those terms to describe what exactly these nations are, these people are. Whether or not they live on a planet somewhere is, to me, is irrelevant. The fact that they come from the heavens is the main idea. They come from a higher dimension, and they are interdimensional beings. Now, so let's go to Genesis chapter 6 and see what happened. Genesis 6, 1, it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God, and I've made a very strong case to show that the sons of God, the only thing that they can be is entities from the angelic realm. Psalm 82 bears that out. Job chapter, 38 bears that out. When Job talks about the sons of God shouted for joy and all the morning stars sang. So the stars are the sons of God. In the New Testament, it is us who are referred to as the sons of God. but we are going to be made as the stars of heaven. We're going to be made as the angels. When we're resurrected, that new body that we take on will be in the form of those who are of the angelic realm. Hence, sons of God. Psalm 82 says, I have said ye are gods, and all of ye children of the Most High. So, we'll move beyond that and look at what happens when these sons of God, and the question is it even possible for them to procreate? And I believe the Bible is telling us yes. So verse 2 again, the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. The Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, and yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days. Where did they come from? What were they? If, as some say, they're simply the generation of Seth and Adam's seed, then that doesn't explain how they became giants. How the tallest that I could find in the Bible was Og, king of Bashan, whose bedstead was well over nine cubits. Big fella. Monster guy. 13 and a half feet, at least. So, how is it that an unbelieving man marries a believing girl, and because of that, that produces a 13 and a half, 14, 15 foot tall child? I don't understand that. There has to be something unique about the DNA, the genome of these sons of God. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men. So there were giants in the earth in those days, meaning before the flood, and also after the flood. And we know, because we can trace, going backward, like from Goliath, we can go all the way back to, I think it's Ishbi-Benob, who is the, no, Arba. Arba is the father of Anak. Anak had his offspring. And we know that Goliath wasn't an only child. He had four brothers that David's mighty men fought and killed. So it happened before the flood. It happened after the flood. God allowing it to happen for a reason. So they bare children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And what this amounts to is that these giants are hybrids. Since the sons of God represent an entirely different species, entirely different group of people. Now, were they the reptilians? Were they the insectoids? Were they the grays? Were they the Nordics? That could be. That's what... I just drew a blank. The guy that was... he was a logger out in New Mexico and was taken up into a ship, held there for 5 days, and they finally sent him back, and he remembers waking up on this ship, these little grays standing around him, and then he jumps up and it scares him off, and he goes into, walks out of the room that he's in and goes into another room, and he can see the stars outside like on a screen. And he's like, I'm in outer space. How did I get here? Next thing he knows, there's a tall, blonde, blue-eyed guy standing behind him. He's going, great, another human. And anyway, they take him to a hangar area, and there's all these little saucer-shaped discs, flying machines inside this hangar. They put something over his mouth like an oxygen mask. He passes out, because there's a couple more, a male and a female, inside this hangar, and they leave him down in the middle, laying in the street, about 30 miles away from where he was taken from. And he swears to that he's taken multiple lie detector tests, him and his crew, because they accused his crew of killing him and burying the body somewhere. So when he showed up 5 days later, well, obviously they didn't kill him, and obviously the story that they told was true. So whether it was the tall whites or the draconians or the insectoids or whatever, but they mated with these human women. Thus, you create a hybrid species. They're not all human. They're not all God. They're sort of half and half, as it were. And God has a lot to say about that. And I think this then brings in that idea of what the fourth kingdom is all about. So is it possible that an angelic entity, we'll call it, an angelic entity, is it possible for them to procreate? Is it possible for them to have DNA? 1 Corinthians 15, verse 35. But some men will say, how are the dead raised up? And with what body do they come? Thou fool, that which thou sowest is not quickened, in other words, made back alive, except it die. And that which thou sowest not that body that shall be, but bare grain, it may chance of wheat, or of some other grain. And he said, but God giveth it a body as it hath pleased him, and to every seed his own body. So I believe the Bible is telling you, if it has a body, that body was built from seed, which we know to be DNA. We know it now. We know how DNA works. We know how DNA encodes to build all the parts of whatever creature it's building. So the bottom line is, if it has a body. Now, some would say, well, angels are spirits. Spirits don't have bodies. But that's not true. Does God have eyes? Yes. Does God have a head? Yes. Does he have a mouth? Yes. Does he have arms and legs? We know he does. Does he have feet? Yes. Some would say, well, that's an anthropomorphism. God isn't really like that. He just chose to explain himself that way in a way that we could understand. But I don't see that in the Bible anywhere. I don't see the Bible's explanation of God telling us, yeah, I mentioned that I have feet, but I don't really have feet. What I have, I can't describe to you. I don't see that anywhere in the Bible. That's something that man has come up with. So if I stick merely to the scripture and believe that it's telling me the truth in a literal fashion, then I believe that God has arms, legs, a mouth, a nostrils, eyes. It's where he stores his grace. Amen? Because that's where Noah found it, in the eyes of the Lord. So I believe those things to be true and genuine. To every seed his own body. Then he said, verse 39, all flesh is not the same flesh. There's one kind. Notice the count here, the numbering. There's one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of beasts, another of fishes, another of birds. Four. He does the same thing. Paul does the same thing. That's what we had here in Joel chapter 1, verses 4. You had these four types of creatures, and I think that's the Bible telling us they're not from this world. In Romans chapter 1, Paul uses that same method to describe what people make God into. It says, professing themselves to be wise, they became as fools, or became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, four-footed beasts, and creeping things. 1, 2, 3, 4. Who changed the truth of God into a lie and worship and serve the creature more than the creator who is blessed forever. Amen. So, back here. Men, beasts, fishes, and birds. And then he said in verse 40, there are also celestial bodies. What does that mean? It means they're from the ceiling. Celios. They're from the heavens, the sky. There are celestial, fourth dimensional bodies and bodies terrestrial. So, when the three men came walking down the road to Abraham's house, Abraham knew who they were. They looked like men. They were described as men. They had feet that they had their feet washed. They were fed a good meal, and they ate it. They sat down under the shade of a tree, and they were angels of the angelic realm. One of them was the Lord himself. Before he is incarnated into the baby there at Bethlehem, but they possessed bodies. And I've had some people say to me, well, that's just how they appeared to be. But it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. That's how they are. They had a body. They had feet because they had their feet washed. They ate the food that was given to them. And by the way, do angels eat food? Yes. That's what God gave to the Israelites for 40 years. There's that number again. Was angels' food. The Bible says that. He gave them the same thing that he feeds the angels with. Now, I don't understand why the angels eat. What do they need it for? I just know that they do. I know it from the scriptures. So here you have evidence that, number one, there are earthly terrestrial bodies, us, and there are celestial bodies, them, and they have DNA. If they have a body, they have DNA. And he said, the glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, another glory of the stars, for one star differs from another star in glory. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown in corruption, it is raised in incorruption. It is sown in honor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body, and there is a spiritual body. There it is in plain language. The celestial bodies are spiritual bodies that have a form. They function. They do things. The wings cause them to fly. The legs cause them to walk. The eyes cause them to see, just like us, because we're made in God's image. But they are from a higher plane of existence, a higher realm, as it were, the fourth dimension. So, with that in mind, 1, 2, 3, 4, Daniel's fourth kingdom. It's not a kingdom from this earth. It's not going to be an earthly ruler. It's not going to be Adolf Hitler. It's not going to be Henry Kissinger. It's not going to be Joe Biden. It's not going to be Donald Trump. It's not going to be Elvis Presley. Who else? Yeah, it's not going to be any of those. It's not going to be, who did Tim LaHaye say in his novel series? Nikolai? a very savvy politician from the European Union, it's not going to be him. I believe the Antichrist is a hybrid. It's a hybrid. The joining together of two species. Spiritual beings, natural beings, joining together. So it is written, the first Adam was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit. Now, I want you to think about that last Adam. He's talking about Christ. Howbeit, that which was not first, which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterward, that which is spiritual. The first man is of the earth, earthy. The second man is the Lord from heaven. And who was Jesus Christ? He was conceived by the Holy Ghost, Mary retaining her virginity. So we know that God didn't knock on her door like the Mormons believe and teach. They even made a cartoon film about it, of Elohim going to Mary's front door, knocking on the door. Hey, baby, I got something for you. Okay? It didn't happen that way. The Holy Ghost conceived inside the womb of Mary, combining the DNA, I guess, of God with Mary's DNA. So he is both Son of God and Son of Man. Both of them. So the devil has his opposite of that. 1 Corinthians 15:48, as is the earthy, such are they also that are earthy, and as is the heavenly, such are they also that are heavenly. And as we have borne the image of the earthy, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. Now, so Christ is the second Adam, but while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him. This is Matthew chapter 1, verse 20. In a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. So Christ was fully God and fully man. 100% both of them. Now, how's that possible? I just know it happened. So the devil then, he says, I will be like the Most High, but he's always ends up being the opposite. God lives in heaven. The devil's going to live in the lake of fire for all of eternity. They're opposite one another. Antichrist, the opposite of Christ, another Jesus, a different Jesus, as it were. So the devil's version of it is a hybridization program that involves the entities of the fourth kingdom, which I believe would be principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in very high places, joining together, mingling themselves with the seed of man. What happened in Genesis 6 is the opposite of God's plan. God's plan was to send his only begotten son to the earth. So the Holy Ghost conceives in Mary, and Christ, the God-man, is born. He lives, he dies, he's resurrected, he's coming back again. The opposite of that is not the Son of God, but a son of the gods. Like the NIV says about who was in the fiery furnace, a son of the gods. The gods are these evil angels, devils, familiar spirits, evil spirits, whatever you want to call them, that's who they are. The humanity part is that they're going to mingle themselves literally into man's DNA. So, Leviticus 20 gives us an interesting situation that took place. God said again, and think about opposites in this. What's the opposite of a virgin? A whore. Someone who keeps themselves pure. The opposite of that is someone who dallies in whoredoms. Okay? Fornication. So look at this. Leviticus 20, verse 2. Again, thou shalt say to the children of Israel, whosoever he be of the children of Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn in Israel, that giveth any of his seed unto Molech, he shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. And I will set my face against that man, and will cut him off from among his people, because he hath given of his seed unto Molech to defile my sanctuary. What's the sanctuary? The body. And to profane my holy name. And if the people of the land do anyways hide their eyes from the man when he giveth of his seed unto Molech and kill him not, then will I set my face against that man and against his family and will cut him off. And all that go, look at the phrase, all that go a whoring after him to commit whoredom with Molech from among their people. Bump, bump, bump. To commit whoredom with their god. Molech is an evil angel, an unclean spirit, a devil, a god. That's who he is. And the people committed whoredoms with him. In what sense? I would say probably in every sense that it's possible. And we know now from the scriptures that it is possible for an angelic being to mate with a human. Even before the whole ET alien thing became into people's minds, there were devils referred to as either incubus or succubus, depending on if the devil was male or female. A male devil appearing to a human woman and cohabitating with her. A female devil cohabitating with a human male. Okay? Literally doing that. And that was what I was thinking of as I'm watching this documentary about this man who claims that he has had multiple encounters with a female alien that he called Crescent. And he was actually taken aboard their ship at one point, taken into a room where the walls had all these little cubicles built into them with all these little alien hybrid babies in there. And Crescent told the man, these are your children, but they're not doing so well. They're dying. So the man noticed that when he touched one of the babies, it was like an electrical charge went out of his body into that child, and the child rejuvenated. So he went around touching all of those children in there. They were creating a hybrid species. And I can tell you, I've read several books on the subject. John Mack, Bud Hopkins, who spent years researching people who said that they had had fourth encounter experiences where the aliens had taken them up into a ship and so on. And John Mack and Bud Hopkins and other writers all agreed there seems to be something that they want, something they desire. And the humans, it doesn't benefit the humans, it benefits the aliens somehow, some way. All of them agreed and said that the sole purpose of all of these alien visitations with the people on this earth has been a breeding program to create a hybrid race, joining the alien nations with the human nations. So hence you have God telling the Israelites, verse, and again, Leviticus 20, I will set my face against that man and against his family and will cut him off and all that go a-whoring after him to commit whoredom with Molech from among their people. God said he'd cut him off. They're not going to be my people if they're going to do that. Did he mean it literally? I think it's possible. I think he did. Leviticus 19, verse 19, ye shall keep my statutes. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Don't let the cattle interbreed with other species. Now, to all farmers who've ever raised cattle, you know that a cow, a female bovine species, does not go out into the horse pen looking for a mate among the horses. And the horses, the male horses, aren't sitting there looking at the cows going, well, she's a nice one. Boy, man, I'd like to have her. They don't do that. So, but now we live in the 21st century. Now we live in the world where we can take the genetics of a horse and the genetics of a cow and mingle their seed together. We can do that now. We're living in that age. God said, thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Thou shalt not sow thy field with mingled seed. Neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen. Linen is from cotton, a plant. Wool is from an animal, sheep. And God was just, I mean, you would think that's a silly law. I mean, why can't I wear a coat or a garment that's 50% cotton, 50% polyester? Why can't I do that? God said, don't do it. You may not understand why, but God said, don't do it. I don't want the mingling taking place. I don't want genetically modified cows or chickens or turkeys or goats or lambs. I don't want that. I don't want genetically modified corn, rice, soybeans, tomatoes. God is against that. You don't sow mingled seed in your field. You don't do that. And I would say to you that probably 99% of the farms in America are using hybrid seeds. Seeds that have been genetically modified. And I know about natural genetic modifications that take place in nature, like grafting. I mean, I get that. There is a certain amount of that that takes place, and it's a natural occurrence. It can happen without the scientific manipulation. But now we're talking about scientific manipulation of seed, species that would never, I mean, you couldn't take a rose branch and graft it into an apple tree. You couldn't do that. Now you can. You can genetically modify the rose to such an extent that it would graft into an apple tree or any other tree that you wanted. You could have pine trees growing roses all over the world if you wanted to now. Oak trees bearing apples. You could do that now if you wanted to. That's what God's talking about. God says no to that. So think about what he thinks about the fourth kingdom. Think about what he thinks about what the sons of God did in Genesis 6, before and after the flood, and what's coming to this world. Ezra chapter 9. Now when these things were done, the princes came to me, saying, "The people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the lands, doing according to their abominations, even of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, and the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken of their daughters for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Yea, the hand of the princes and the rulers have been chief in this trespass." You know what happened in the book of Ezra? They put away their wives and their children. All the men that had mingled the seed of Israel with any of the tribes who were not Israel tribes, they put away their wives and their children. Sure, it caused quite a bit of grief and heartache, but that's what they did because God told them not to do that to begin with. They mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Now remember, everything in the Bible is there for a reason. It's there to tell you not only what has happened, but what will happen. And I think a mingling is going to take place. I understand everybody's fear about something that could possibly rewrite the human genome. I understand that. And I am against any such procedure that would permanently alter human genetics. Having said that, I do believe that the ultimate form of this genetic rearranging or genetic mingling that's going to take place is going to take place when humans join themselves with angels, devils, gods, unclean spirits, familiar spirits. That is going to happen. And I think in the day when that happens, God is certainly going to write Ichabod. The glory is departed. The candle is going to be blown out. Okay? So that's what I am warning against. I'm not overly concerned, although I do believe that eventually genetic modifications will take place in the name of medical science. I do believe that will happen. But I'm more concerned about the mingling with these devils that is going to take place. Mankind is literally going to sell his soul for the devil. Literally, and allow these principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, spiritual wickedness in high places to mingle themselves into the genetic structure of human beings. Deuteronomy 7. God said in verse 1, "When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations." Think of the seven heads on the beast. seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And I'll tell you right now, the Israeli army and the Israeli Air Force, those are bad dudes, man. They are trained warriors. They've been protecting their homeland now for years, and they're quite good at it. But we're not. I don't believe we're just talking about earthly civilization. Anytime you're dealing with the giants, I believe you're looking at something related to the coming fourth kingdom. So as Israel goes into the promised land to face these giants, it's a prophetic picture of what's going to happen in the last days. The giants represent the fourth kingdom. So God said, verse 2, when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them, and shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Notice this. When the Lord thy God shall deliver them before me, before thee, thou shalt, number one, smite them. Number two, destroy them. Number three, make no covenant with them. Number four, show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter shalt thou not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those patterns are there to tell us. This is a picture. This is a prophecy. This is a warning to watch out for the coming of the fourth kingdom. Don't mix with them. Don't mingle yourselves with them. Don't allow them to mingle with you. Don't mate with them. Don't make marriages with them. Nothing. Don't mess with them. But what did Israel do? Well, we have the evidence. They did exactly what God told them not to do. And now there's consequences. Let's see here. I already just read that. Numbers chapter 13. So this is when they reach the promised land and they're ready to go in. But Moses is going to send 12 spies into that land, one from each tribe. And the Bible says in Numbers 13, verse 25, and they returned from searching of the land after how many days? 40. There's your fourth kingdom notification right there. And you're going to see that 40 again here in a little bit. But why did he send them 40 days? Because it has a reference to the fourth kingdom. So they were there 40 days, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel under the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and to all the congregation, and shewed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we come into the land whither thou sendest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there, and the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. There's two of them, Joshua and Caleb, two witnesses that testify on the Lord's behalf and say, if God promised us this land, will he not give it to us? Sure he will. God keeps his promises. If we'll just go in, even though there are giants, and even though the walls are great and strong and impenetrable, Caleb says, shouldn't we just believe God? Shouldn't we trust him? Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? And so, verse 32, and they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it were men of great stature. All the people that they saw, all of them, were giants. Man, that's something, isn't it? To think that there existed in the land of Canaan, which is now the land of Israel, that in the land of Canaan, all flesh had corrupted itself. They mingled themselves with the seed of men in Canaan land. There's your fourth kingdom. And we wrestle, we're wrestling against them just the way Joshua and Caleb would have wrestled against them, would have fought them. Now, you can make practical applications with this. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. Things that hold power over us. Addictions. Whether it be to illegal drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, alcohol, which is legal, pornography. You're addicted to lying. You're a compulsive gambler. Whatever. Whatever the issue is. You're wrestling not with flesh and blood, but against things that you can't shoot with a bullet. Things you can't club them over the head with a baseball bat. And if you try to fight them in the flesh, you'll lose every time. If you really believe the garbage that Joel Osteen sells you, that if you just think positive thoughts, then the devil cannot live in your mind or anywhere around you, people, that's a lie. That is a setup. Number one, it's not even possible to just think positive thoughts all the time. Do we not have other emotions that take over? And what they want you to believe is when God detects negativity coming from you, he can't bless you. I'm sorry, but you're just too negative. I can't do it. I just can't touch you. I can't heal you. That's a lie. It's a big fat lie. It's a setup, is what it is. So here's your fourth kingdom here. The battle that must be fought to gain what God says is ours. Heavenly Jerusalem. In fact, they're living in your mansion right now. And they need to be kicked out, cast out. So, Joshua and Caleb, but they have a different spirit in them, the Bible says. They try to convince the Israelites, hey, we can go in there. We can win this. And I think a similar fate is coming to this world. This world is going to embrace the fourth kingdom, the principalities and the powers and the rulers of the darkness of this world and the spiritual wickedness in high places. The world's going to embrace that while we resist it, fight against it, stand against it. We're going to have the whole world hating us for it. They won't understand why we're not going along with this, why we're never going to go along with this. They don't understand that. And they'll persecute us. As many as they possibly can, as many as God allows, they're going to persecute and kill. Because they understand that they are going to become gods when they mingle with the gods or let the gods mingle with them. They're going to have abilities that they never had before. What was the X-Men all about? It's about people who are genetically different than others. And they have abilities that no one else has. Magic powers, as it were. That's a setup. That's getting people to lust after those days that are coming. So when the whether you call them aliens or you call them devils, either way, you're talking about the same entities. When they present to this world that they have the cures for all diseases, that they have the ability to enhance all human beings into superior beings, to give them the ability to become gods, man's going to jump all over that. All over that. Because they want their best life now. I don't. I want my best life to be the one that I get forever, not just the one that's temporary. So Joshua and Caleb tries to talk them into going into the promised land, and the Israelites refused. Now let me go to Hebrews, because Hebrews deals with this exact thing. Paul said in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 8, harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me and proved me and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore, or why, was I grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Your sin will lie to you. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. And you will do that if the Holy Spirit does abide in you. While it is said today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation, for some when they heard did provoke. Howbeit, not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. And this brings us to Numbers 14, verse 32. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness. And your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. After the number of the days in which ye search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, ye shall bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. Bottom line was, God was not going to allow the generation of people that came out of Egypt to be the generation that goes into the promised land. It had to be, and this is a beautiful gospel illustration here. Those people had to go in their second generation. Which is a picture of being born again. In other words, the generation of people that left Egypt did not make it to the promised land. It was the generation beyond them that made it into the promised land. And that's the generation that got to go in. So Jesus telling Nicodemus, you must be born again. It's the regeneration that goes in, not the original generation, because the original generation says, we can't do it. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back into the sin. Let's not fight these guys. But the young generation says, oh, let's do it. We're ready. Let's do it. So that is a picture of the fourth kingdom and what you and I might face when that day comes, that they say, we're here to mingle ourselves into your DNA. We're going to put ourselves, inject ourselves into and modify your DNA so that you too can become gods with us. The sons of Anak, sons of the giant, were offspring of someone who was already a giant. Their size diminished over time. Look at this picture. See the puny humans down here? See how tall this guy is? Good grief. It's like they're barely knee high to this guy. So if these guys, let's say these guys are 6 feet tall. That means from the feet to the knees of this giant is 6 feet. What does that say about the rest of him? He's got to be somewhere around 18 to 20 feet tall. So, only Og. Og was 9 cubits, was the length of his bed. And by the way, it was a bedstead of what? Iron. And that connects you then. Og is a foreshadow of the Iron Kingdom. 9 cubits. But then by the time we get to Goliath, he's 6 cubits in a span. We have a reduction of 3 cubits almost. What happened? I think the giants mated with human women. And as time and generations occur, then the size of the giants is reduced, is my theory on that. Now, one question that I have, are the offspring of the giants still alive on the earth today? That's a legitimate question. The last ones we see were the ones destroyed by David and his mighty men. But did he end up killing all of them? All of the sons of the giant, all of the sons of Anak. Did he end up killing all of them? And wouldn't it be interesting to find a genetic marker in a certain family bloodline that was indicated that their forefathers were not from this world? Dun, dun, dun. Jeremiah 50 verse 37, a sword is upon their horses and upon their chariots and upon all the mingled people that are in the midst of her. And he's talking about Babylon. Babylon is the dwelling place of the mingled people. And they shall become as women. A sword is upon her treasures, and they shall be robbed. Leviticus 19. Back to that verse. You shall keep my statutes. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Thou shalt not sow thy field with mingled seed. Neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon thee. Notice the Masonic square and compass. What it represents. It represents the joining together of two to create what's in the middle between them. The compass is pointing upward, the square is pointing downward, and in the middle space between them is the letter G. A, B, C, D, E, F, I almost forgot it, G. It's the seventh letter. Remember the seven nations? Remember the seven heads? I think it's possible that that's what that letter G means. What it represents is a number. The number of tribes in Canaan land. The number of the heads that are on the beast. And how, and the relationship. I'll explain the relationship of the square and the compass here as we go along. Remember, the sons of God came in into the daughters of men. Notice these are opposites. Sons, daughters, God, men. They represent opposites that mingled together and produced a hybrid race known as the giants. Genesis chapter 1, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw the light that it was good. God divided the light from darkness. So what is opposite, God divides and keeps them separate from one another. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. So the Masonic trestle board floor that you, if you've ever been in a Masonic lodge, or you can Google this, you can do a Google image search. The Masonic trestle board floor. It looks like a checkerboard. And it's meant to show the opposites of white and black, light and darkness, that they are integrated together, merged together, like opposites. Think of the morning. Lucifer is son of the morning, is he not? What is the morning? It's not night, and it's not day. What is it? It's sort of the combination of the two, where light and darkness meet for a certain period of time in the morning. So the morning is light and darkness. And by the way, did you know when it says son of the morning? See, I just had this crazy notion that the Bible's literal. Did you know the morning had a womb? Sure does. Psalm 110:3, that thy people shall be willing in the day of thy power in the beauties of holiness from the womb of the morning. Thou hast the dew of thy youth. Womb of the morning. And that's where Lucifer was born from. The womb of the morning. Because he's the son of the morning. He is the son of... Do you remember the Twilight series? And what were they about? A girl falling in love with a vampire or werewolf, a beast, right? Hybrid baby. So the son of the morning is a son, an offspring, the seed, the generation of light mingling with darkness. Interesting. That's who Lucifer is. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 5, "Ye are all children of the light and children of the day, not the night or not the morning." You're either going to be one or the other. We are not of the night nor of darkness. There's four here. You're children of the light, children of the day. We're not of the night nor of darkness. 1, 2, 3, 4. And that describes us. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Those two go together. Daylight and sobriety. Darkness and drunkenness. For they that sleep, sleep in the night. They that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for an helmet, the hope of salvation. I have great hope that the Father God will keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. I have great trust that my Father will keep the covenant of salvation and the covenant of grace until the very day when it will be required of me to have it. I mean, I need it every hour, but there's coming a certain day that I'm going to need it the most, and I trust God to keep it there. 2 Corinthians 6:14, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. A square can't marry a compass, right? A square draws squares, and a compass draws circles, and you can't marry a circle in a square. What's the offspring of a circle in a square? For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? What communion hath light with darkness? Check that out. What communion? See, when we laid out a tile floor like that, some of the tiles are black, some are white. We don't know how to meld them or fuse them together so that they are both white and black at the same time. We don't know how to do that. What communion hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? Don't marry or don't date people who are not born again. God was gracious to me. Not only did he give me a wife that I don't think we've ever had a doctrinal disagreement. And I remember going out with a girl in high school. She went to a Southern Baptist, good Christian girl, but she went to a Southern Baptist church. And we broke up over doctrine. We sure did. She didn't believe the same way I did. So we broke up. God was gracious to me, gave me a wife that I don't argue doctrine with. I don't believe one way and she another. Okay? And I'm glad that I don't have to, because, I mean, I'm pretty stubborn in things that I believe. Only God can change them. And he has. Trust me, he has. And if he wants to do it again, he doesn't need my permission. He can do it whenever he wants. But I've never had to fight my wife over anything like that. What communion hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial? What part hath he that believeth with an infidel? What agreement hath the temple of God with idols? All of these are none. For ye are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Notice this, four things. I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. If you're a hybrid, there's no chance of going to heaven. If you allow the fourth kingdom to mingle themselves with your seed, your DNA, there's no hope for salvation. You have to come out from among them and be ye separate, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. To me, it's very simple, this teaching. It's very simple to understand and comprehend. Matthew 24, but as the days of Noah were, what's he referring to? Multiple things, I believe. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage. How many things were they doing? Eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. And the only thing that I can see giving in marriage and marrying in the days before the flood are the sons of God and the daughters of men. It's telling us, I believe, that it's going to happen again. The fourth kingdom, where they mingle themselves with the seed of men. That's your DNA change. So every time you see giants in the Bible, an encounter with giants or some story of the giants. You're looking, I believe, at a symbol for the fourth kingdom. Something that represents that. And what is it that destroys the fourth kingdom? Same thing that destroyed Goliath. A stone. Cut without hands. Where did David get the stones that he slung at Goliath? Out of the river. They were cut without hands. Isn't that neat? So your fourth kingdom. Head of gold, chest of silver, legs, thighs of brass, feet of iron, toes of part iron, part clay. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. For as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay, part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron. For as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. Notice the opposites. Clay and iron are opposites. Strong and weak are opposites. Kingdom is divided. Behold, Job chapter, look at this. In this verse, it tells you the meaning of Daniel 2. Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. How much less in them that dwell in houses of clay? He's telling you the meaning of Daniel chapter 2. First of all, the angels, and then the clay. That's what you have here, the iron and the clay. Here it's angels and clay. And the person speaking in Job chapter 4 is making a point. If God will arrest and charge his own angels with a crime, how much less them that dwell in houses of clay? If God doesn't trust the angels, is he going to trust man? No! Absolutely not. Notice the language that he used here. He didn't just say humans. He says them that dwell in houses of clay, meaning us. Humans. The clay is us. The angels are the iron. And it's interesting to me that at the core of the earth is a great big ball of molten iron. And at the heart of every star, including our own sun, because of the nuclear reactions that are taking place, the stars are creating iron at their core. So whether it's the stars or the heart of the earth, both of them are iron. Whew. Stars have an iron core. The earth has an iron core. So as the toes of the feet were part of iron, part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. So every story, I mean, you have the story of David and Goliath, but how many brothers does Goliath have? Four. It's a picture of the fourth kingdom. And it will be destroyed. It will be conquered. Don't join with it. To do so is to accept a false gospel, I believe. Because I think the promise that is going to be made by the Iron Kingdom people is that we're going to give you the ability to live forever. We're going to give you immortality. You'll never die. And I think that's part of man's big quest, is that he's never going to die. That in itself is a false gospel. So what did Paul say? Though we or an angel from heaven bring you any other gospel, let him be accursed. And he's referenced that other gospel four times. Two times as another gospel, two times as any other gospel, any other gospel. Look it up. Between Galatians and 1 Corinthians 11, four times the Apostle Paul referenced another gospel, different gospel. So it must have something to do with giving mankind life and immortality instead of death. And we know, according to the book of Revelation, chapter 9, 5 months, nobody dies. Nobody dies. Not one. Let's see here. After this, I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth and devoured. And so he's the representative of the fourth kingdom. Devoured and break in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. 10 for dominion. Horns for enforcement. When the horns mess with the bull, get the horns. Right? The horns have a way of forcing. I mean, how do buck deer decide who's going to get the mating grounds? They have a clash of antlers. That's how they do it. Ephesians 6, these rulers are the stars that we wrestle against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world. That would be the stars, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. There's your fourth kingdom. And this vision was the big secret, the biggest secret ever. Daniel 2:19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. In verse 22, Daniel says, he revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. This is what grabbed my attention when I'm wanting to know the secret of masonry. That verse got it for me. I went, that's it. That's the secret. That's the key to unlocking every secret society. Every mystery doctrine, every mystery religion, every secret symbol, secret society, secret handshake. The skull and the crossbones. Secret societies. Albert Pike said the grand arcanum, the great secret, is that secret whose revelation would overturn earth and heaven. Let me read that. No, it's not that. That UFO article again. Where the guy said that they'd been wanting to release this mankind's secret agreement with these aliens for years. Let's see here. He has the state of Israel made contact with aliens? According to retired Israeli officer and current professor Haim Eshed, the answer is yes. But this has been kept a secret because humanity isn't ready. There's talk that a movie released in the 50s called The Day the Earth Stood Still. If you've never seen it, I encourage you to watch it. It's an interesting movie. It basically has an alien by the name of Kla'atu coming down, landing in Washington, D.C., take me to your leader type thing. He announces to the leaders of the world that the aliens have been watching planet Earth, and now that mankind has nuclear weapons, atomic weapons, we represent a serious threat to the universe. So Klaatu basically says, I'm sorry, but I'm here to tell you we're going to destroy every human off this planet because you guys are, you're horrible people. You're bad. You possess means of war that we can't allow you to fulfill. So we're going to intervene and we're going to put a stop to you humans because you're dangerous. We're going to kill you all. And there's rumors that say that the CIA had that movie produced to gauge the reaction of the typical citizen. What if a saucer landed on the front lawn of the White House? What if it became known that there was life beyond Earth, including civilizations that are willing to make contact with us? The idea was back in the 50s, it would be panic in the streets. It would be because they, if you remember, Orson Welles, before he got into TV and films, was in radio. He was part of the Mercury Theater, and every Saturday night they did a radio play. Well, one night they decided to do an adaptation of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. But they did it as if it was a live radio broadcast. So they played music, and the radio announcer says, "Hi, this is Hal, and I'm, you know, here. Here's some more great music coming to you from the ballroom at such and such, you know, hotel. Hold on a second. We have a flash coming in that a saucer-shaped disc has seen crashed more in a few minutes, and people believed that it was a real broadcast, that aliens had landed, Martians had landed, and that we were under attack by aliens from Mars, and people were going out. They were shooting water towers because the description of the aliens were they had three legs and, you know, they had these, you know, big disc thing on top or whatever, and they were shooting at water towers thinking they were the aliens. People went nuts over that. So there's always been this idea, well, we can't tell the people. It's a big secret. We must keep it a secret because it'll change the world. Well, mankind right now is being prepped for that change. You're hearing things about the Great Reset. That goes along with the New World Order, or an idea in the New Age called the paradigm shift, shifting man's consciousness to a higher awareness. In other words, at some point, there is going to be a revelation of a secret that has been kept hidden that Albert Pike said would overturn Earth and heaven. And I think he was right. And so, I mean, you hear commercials. This is a new way of thinking. This changes everything. Thinking higher ways or whatever. You hear these ideas and concepts embedded into commercials. In other words, it's like they're making us subconsciously aware that a great change is about to occur. This will change everything, and it will. It will. Rosicrucian doctrine says the manner and the means by which the present day man is transformed into the divine Superman. This symbol, the Christian Rose Cross, shows the end and aim of human evolution, the solution of the world mystery, man's past evolution, present constitution, and particularly the secret of his future development. Why is evolution such a powerful force in our world right now. You have to convince people that not only did they rise up from a lower state, they're still rising. And at some point in the very near future, man's going to take another giant leap on his way to godhood. The meaning of the square and compass. By the way, this is the Hershey, Pennsylvania Masonic Lodge. It is Lodge number 666. I'm not kidding you. I took this picture myself. The square, therefore, is a natural and appropriate symbol of this earth. The square is pointing down. The compass is an equally natural and appropriate symbol of the circle of the heavens. The compass is pointing up. It represents opposites. The female is the compass. The male, or the female is the square. The compass is the male. And that's what those two symbols represent. So the compass is the hermetic symbol of the creative deity, the male, and the square is the symbol of the productive earth or universe. Joining together in a mating ritual. Israelites committing whoredoms with Molech, literally, which produces the child represented by the letter G. That child with seven heads. Lots of symbols here. Here are the two pillars, Jacob and Boaz. We know that Jacob and Boaz together were 46 cubits. Jacob was 23 cubits. Boaz was 23 cubits. And here on the corners are the four elemental symbols, earth, air, fire, and water. Opposites. Earth and air, fire, and water. Both are opposites of each other. And they are mingled together. The vine represents DNA. There it is there. You have pater and mater, father and mother. Superioris, inferius. You have the sun, you have the moon, male and female, obviously, all joined together here in the middle to produce a hybrid child, a son of the gods. Here, Jacob and Boaz is depicted, and one pillar has a globe of the earth. The other pillar has a globe with stars on it. You see it better here. Here's Jacob, by the way, the spiral staircase represents DNA. When I went to the Mother Lodge in Washington, D.C., and walked up, I'm walking up the spiral staircase. We have a tour guide. She's taking us up to that big lodge room you've seen pictures of. And I'm walking up these steps, and I'm counting the steps to myself. I get to the top, and I tell the guy I'm with. I said, there's 23 steps here. I said, there's another set opposite of that. It's got 23 steps as well. I said, that's 46 total. He went, wow. So the spiral staircase represents DNA. And here again, the two pillars, 23 cubits tall. One is a globe of the earth. The other is a globe of the stars. Here is the celestial bodies and the terrestrial bodies. They're all joined together in the same temple, right? That's what's going to defile that temple. The mingling of the iron species with the seed of men. That's what's going to defile man's temple. And God's going to cast them out for that. But it's the joining together of the heavens and the earth, which are opposites, yet they are going to join together. Notice these men. They're 3 feet locked together. Three hands here. Three hands here. So this represents the heavens. This represents the earth. This represents the joining of them together. Okay? So you have 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45. Then another on the other 3 feet, you have 60 digits altogether. The Royal Arch of Masonry. This represents the earth. This represents the heaven. They're held together by the keystone. They're joined together. Something fuses heaven and earth together. They're fused together in the form of the keystone. The keystone's a symbol of the Antichrist. There's a close-up of the keystone. Notice these symbols here. The interconnected triangles. You have six, six, six. That's a dun dun dun. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So, bottom line. There is a change, an alteration in man's DNA coming. I don't know when it's going to come. And I don't believe that it comes as a result of a vaccine of any kind. I do believe, just as in the typology given to us in Scripture, that mankind is going to commit whoredoms with Molech, with the gods, with the fourth kingdom, thus allowing them to mingle themselves with man's seed, man's DNA. Offspring, which I think will bring in the man of sin, the son of perdition. That's kind of how I see it happening, how it's going to all shake down. So, you know, if you ever watched the movie The Thing from Outer Space, okay, the end of the movie, they had everybody freaking out, telling them, keep your eyes in the skies. Keep watching out. Because I knew the aliens were coming, right? Well, they are. They literally are, according to the Bible. They're coming. And they have a plan. That is to mingle themselves with man's DNA. To create a hybrid species. That, to me, is very, very plain. Very sure. God bless you. I love you. We'll see you Sunday. Keep us in your prayers. Pray for the orphans doing well in Catali. Pray for the next feeding that we're going to do before Christmas. Thank you so much for all of you who've helped out with that. Think Bible.